From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
With schools well underway, we have a great lineup of school leaders on the program today, including the newly appointed headmaster from Orchard Lake St. Mary's Preparatory High School, Leonard Karshnia, Roseville Community Schools Restorative Justice Facilitator, Karen Rice, and from St. Clair Shores Southlake High School, my alma mater, culinary arts teacher Michelle Downs. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is the newly appointed headmaster from Orchard Lake St. Mary's Preparatory High School, Leonard Karshnia. Welcome to the program, Leonard.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. As the newly appointed headmaster, please tell our School Talks community about your history with the school and your appointment to this pretty important position.
Yes, I was coaching basketball at my alma mater in 1984, 5, 6, 7 for three seasons, and the head coach at the time was Bob Shoemaker, who had a long and storied career at Orchard Lake St. Mary's, and these are the pre-internet and cell phone days, as you know, Doc, and I had happened to stop by my mother's house, and she said that that coach that you worked for is looking for you, and this was August of 1991. And so I ended up calling Shu, as we all called him, and he told me there was a JV coaching, basketball coaching job, a varsity assistant. They had just, Orchard Lake had just hired Denny Butcher, whose father, Donis, was actually head coach at the Pistons for a couple seasons, and he was looking for a varsity assistant in that. So I took the English contract, taught six English classes to freshmen, and I was not yet married or had no children, and so I took the JV boys head coaching job and varsity assistant that first year. I only did that one season. That was a lot. And as they say, the rest is history. I've done just about every job there except priest, Dr. Livernoy, and dean of students, dean of admissions, director of admissions, and academic dean of discipline, vice headmaster, teacher of Latin, science, and English. And recently was asked when Bob Piles entered his retirement if I'd consider being headmaster, and we worked that out, and so I couldn't be more proud. But that's enough about me. There's so much more about the school to talk about.
Very
please.
Much. And yes. You know, your experience certainly qualifies you to the highest degree to become headmaster of that storied program. So let's talk about the school for a minute. What is the school's mission, and how do you see it influencing the day-to-day experiences for students?
Well, there's, I guess, two slogans or mantras in addition to our school seal, which is Initium Sapientiae Timor Domini, which means the beginning of wisdom is fear of the Lord. But we go by the back of our t-shirt, which is God, Family, St. Mary's, and prioritized in that order. We are a Roman Catholic school, and we're proud of that in our faith formation and our development of leaders. And families are certainly essential in a key fabric of who we are, moms and dads. We like to say when a young man or young woman chooses our school, we want the whole family to be happy that they're coming to St. Mary's because they're all welcome. Finally, St. Mary's itself is, something that we want our students and our staff and our alumni base to be proud of when they walk out in the community to have that OLSM, Orchard Lake St. Mary's, on their shirt, their hoodie, their jacket, and we're proud that we are a big name in Southeast Michigan, the Midwest, and throughout the country, and even the world.
And speaking of alumni, I know you have some distinguished alumni, and you've had some impressive leaders among the world visit the school. Tell us about that.
We have. We consider ourselves friends with St. John Paul II. Prior to becoming Pope, he was the Cardinal from Krakow, Poland, and he visited our school in 1969 and 1976. He made the statement that if the Orchard Lake schools did not exist, they would need to be established. Fill Orchard Lake, fill it to capacity. And we've done that, and we're so proud of that. And Lech Wałęsa, who worked with John Paul on the Solidarity Movement, Solidarności in Polish. He spoke to our student body at our Shrine Chapel, the church on campus. And we had talked, you and I, earlier, Edgar Rice Burroughs, the author of Tarzan, attended school in the building that my office is currently held, and he was a rower. He was in crew. We have a fantastic rowing team, and Edgar Rice Burroughs has been out there. Chief Pontiac, the Native American who settled in the area, is buried out on Apple Island in the Orchard Lake, on Apple Island in the center of the lake. And General Sherman gave his War is Hell speech in our quad. So we've been around an awful long time. When you really look at 1885, you're looking at only a couple decades after the Civil War, and the history of that is it's on our shoulders.
Fascinating. With us is headmaster of Orchard Lake St. Mary's High School, Leonard Karsnia. So, Leonard, tell us a little bit, on top of this extraordinary history, tell us a little bit about how the school approaches curriculum development and the whole pursuit of academics.
The pursuit of academics is, it begins really in 7th and 8th grade, even though we're a 9 through 12 school, with applicants and students that come to our open house, come to our parent information campus tours, and come to they call the shadow day. I don't like using that terminology, but most of the schools use it when the kids visit. I tell them a shadow is the absence of light, and no young person is the absence of light. So I like to get to know their names and welcome them, and we start vetting them, for lack of a better term, really, for grades and decorum. And once they get to St. Mary's, it is our duty to make sure that they have a great educational experience. And in that duty, we have established a four-tier academic program where we have our traditional college prep courses, maybe entitled the nomenclature Algebra 1 or English 9 or Composition and Literature or U.S. History. We then have honors classes for those who are looking for a little more rigorous scholastic setting and peer group in the classroom. Of course, as most schools do, we offer AP or advanced placement programs, which would be the third tier. And then to reflect on our history a bit, Father Joseph Dabrowski, who founded our school in 1885, was also instrumental in establishing the first Felician Sisters Convent here in North America, and with the Felician Sisters currently owning and governing Madonna University, we have that sort of special and unique fourth tier for our seniors. Once in a while, a super elite junior scholar will get in, but Madonna University has their professors come directly to our campus during our school day, and they offer college courses. And I've had experience with students taken off to college or universities with 17 or 18 credit hours, leaving St. Mary's by taking our Madonna College Calc, psychology, college biology, and then maybe passing an AP test or so. And they can literally graduate from, get their bachelor's degree in 7 semesters instead of 8. So we do have a unique relationship. Lawrence Tech additionally has joined our school in the last couple years, and so our seniors really really have a great opportunity at Orchard Lake, and it's one of the things we like to sell as many of our aspects of the school that are really unique to us.
Fantastic. You know, it's an interesting twist on the traditional concept of dual enrollment to have them come to you.
Yes.
What a neat opportunity for students. I'd like to continue this conversation with Leonard and all things St. Mary right after the break. You're listening to School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Once again, at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
So we're back here on School Talks, continuing our conversation with Leonard Karshnia, headmaster of Orchard Lake St. Mary's Preparatory High School. So before the break, we were talking about just the wonderful academic program you have for students there. And alongside that, how does the school support students who are excelling academically, but as well as those students who might need extra help?
Those who are excelling academically, we pursue scholarships, internships. I met with our development and alumni group and the senior academic dean, and we are putting in career days so we can identify where kids are looking at careers. And back in our day, Doc, there wasn't a degree in entrepreneurship, and there is now, or supply chain. It was all just under the umbrella, maybe business or marketing and things like that. So, and we want our students challenged, but I want them to also have balance in their life and a good life. So we talk to parents about that. We interview parents when they come in. They're a part of the scheduling process. And if a student deserves or has earned to be up in an honors or AP course, we'll make that schedule change for them. On the other end of the coin, I've learned through my experience that if a parent calls and says, can you please help? My son has a C minus. And an hour later, I get an email that says, can you please help? My son has a C minus. And it's two different students. We don't just jump. One of those young men, probably freshman, and he may need a old-fashioned kick in the pants, so to speak, pardon me on that one, but my father was in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he may not be submitting his work or diligent in his in paying attention and things of that nature, and that young man with a C-minus might need to step up his game a little bit with respect to work ethic, whereas the other young man might need our help. And maybe he is working very hard and diligently, but needs someone to help him. So we have an NHS peer tutoring program because of our Catholicity. Our students are required to do community service. Many of the upper students are in the National Honor Society, and we work that out in a win-win situation where they may have had that same geometry class with that same teacher, and they sit down and help that person succeed and learn it through a different channel. And so we have a lot of, and there's others, but there's ways to help everybody succeed, and for some students, a B is fantastic. I always tell them if you're doing your best, it's good enough for the man upstairs, and it's good enough for the man or the young lady in the mirror. And a B for one young person is excellent, and a B for somebody else is somebody that they're trying to get to that A minus in or something. So we're all different, yeah. But we can all work hard.
So as a staff member who's worn many, many hats there, what kinds of qualifications or qualities do you look for in teachers and staff who work at the school?
I want someone who cares about young people and has a worldview that includes young people in it. Primarily, I also look for affective objectives, which is pretty much teaching about life in addition to the trigonometry or the history or the Western Civ or whatever the core material is that you're contracted for. Classroom management is essential. I think you need to establish your domain within the classroom setting as an instructor and get that established early where it's okay to have a command presence in the classroom. In fact, I feel it's essential. And then once that is established later down the road, it might be a couple weeks for one teacher, it might be a month for another. We can work into group learning and some of the other pedagogies that are out there. But I think classroom management, caring about young people, and being a good role model are essential. In addition, of course, to the credentials and the licensing and the endorsements that mm-hmm. we're looking for.
Yeah, and you know, in education, we've known for a long time that children who feel connected to the school always do better academically and socially. And tell us a little bit about how a sense of community is built there for students, the kinds of activities and things for them.
Well, I think most schools accomplish that, Dr. Livernoy, through teams and extracurriculars and clubs and programs, whether it be cheerleading or yearbook. Or whatever the case may be, a unique aspect of our school is that we do have a full church and chapel on our campus, and it's really, really special on Wednesdays every week. Our girls' division, and we'll talk about our co-divisional model here shortly, I know, but our girls' division goes to Mass on Wednesdays and every week, so in a 36-week school year, and if you add in special days like Holy Days of Obligation, we're probably at church for a full Roman Catholic liturgy 40 times a year. And it allows us not only to come together in prayer, but it allows us after that liturgy, for myself or one of the administrators, the dean, sometimes the student government leaders or our leadership council, the kids get to speak to the entire student body, and everybody stays on one page that way, and it's in person. It's not through, not to disparage, but it's not through a speaker on a wall or to make announcements in the morning or to read an email, but you get that in-person feel. And so we really do have a brotherhood in the boys' division and a sisterhood in the girls' division that's real and palpable.
Fantastic. With us is Leonard Karshia, headmaster of Orchard Lake St. Mary's High School. Moving forward, tell me a little bit about the co-divisional model that you mentioned with regard to how it provides benefits in the educational environment.
Well, from 1885, when Father Joe founded us, we were an all-boys school. And fast forward to 1989, just a couple years before I started working at St. Mary's, we were a boarding school only, and we still are a boarding school. We have a dorm and a residential program, and it was required from 1885 for 105 years up until 1989, you were required to live at our dorm to be a student at St. Mary's. There was no day school program. And although we have since expanded that to particularize our education and care for all of our students, but we opened a girls' school, Doc, 4 years ago, and we only took a freshman class that first year, and the next thing you know, there was a waiting list, and here four months ago in May, we had our first graduating class of young ladies, and again, our enrollment 4 or 5 years ago was 485 boys, and we just opened school with 940 students. So the growth and the opportunity that we're given now to both young men and young women has flourished. They do not go to class together. All boys classrooms are still maintained. Mm-hmm. We even have some buildings that historically have been retained as all boys. And we have some that are all girls. And then like our science labs, our science building that has the laboratories in it is a building that both divisions use. But again, the classes have remained single gender, and it allows for kind of the social aspect of getting along, boys and girls and men and women in the world, which is necessary to success. And at the same time, within the classroom, the old success of the and the platform of the single gender classroom is still maintained. So it's really been just fantastic. And just to see the spirit of that girls division, the boys has always been there, but to see the spirit of the girls division has really warmed my heart and uplifted me personally and everybody and given us a little spring in our step here as we've opened that school.
Mm-hmm. Absolute fantastic history. Leonard Karshia, headmaster of Orchard Lake St. Mary's, thank you so much for joining us on the program. After a word from our sponsor, we will have restorative justice facilitator Karen Rice coming up next. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Karen Rice, a restorative justice facilitator from Roseville Community Schools. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here today.
So, Karen, as we know, for many years, schools have approached student discipline in a variety of ways. In the early days, corporal punishment was common in schools. Some of us, may remember getting the paddle for misbehaving in school. And over time, as we know, schools have responded in different ways, such as giving detentions, maybe suspending students out of school. Some schools have experimented with suspending students but keeping them in school as part of the regular school day. And in recent years, though, schools have really become focused on helping students repair the situation that created the discipline response in the first place. And I'd like to hear from you because there's something really exciting going on in Roseville Community Schools with regard to your work in restorative justice. And I think a really good place to start is, tell us what restorative is all about.
Well, restorative is really about community, the sense of belonging, creating that community together with those in it. It's about building those relationships. It's about taking care of those relationships. And if any harm happens or somebody makes mistakes, it's about repairing those relationships. So as far as in education, it's guiding those kids, those students, to do that personal reflection and see, hey, where did I make a mistake? Who did I affect? And how do I take care of it? How do I fix it? How do I repair that relationship?
And in that context, why are those relationships important?
Well, humans, you know, we're hardwired for connection. Once we get past our basic needs for survival and safety, that sense of belonging is there. That's what we need in order to function. So all the relationships we build help us as we work together. Relationships are the things that allow us to do the things we're asking of each other. Human beings change their choices based on the bonds they form with one another. So we're always trying to work to build those relationships, especially in that school setting, so our kids know that they feel safe and they feel valued.
And, you know, as a classroom teacher many years ago, I can remember students who came to school, and it was the place where they got the most love and support because it was absent at home. And it really sheds a light on the whole concept of why relationships are so important. So with regard to restorative in terms of education, why did Roseville Schools start this initiative?
Well, we started this way back in about 2010, 2011, and we noticed that kids were just out of the classroom too much. They were getting suspended too much when they made poor choices or missteps within the classroom. They were out for the entire hour, and everyone in education cares so deeply about the kids and their learning. We knew we needed to keep them within the classroom longer. And I've been a facilitator for the last 14 years in Roseville, and we got a lot of great people working. We got a lot of amazing teachers and administrators on board.
And, you know, in that lens, when you say students were out of school, if I understand this correctly, some of them may have been out of school due to discipline, but there probably were many others who were just simply not coming to school. And how does that whole idea of being absent connect back to relationships?
Well, when you form those relationships and when you make those communities where people feel they belong, people want to be there. And if they can, they get there. There's a lot of things outside of students' control. But when it's there, when they can be there, they do want to be there. They form those relationships. So what we're trying to do is make it a safe place where people feel valued, where they feel that somebody cares about them, somebody notices them when they're not there.
And, you know, in a traditional school model, you have people who are in charge and authority, and you have students who obviously, by all accounts in that particular paradigm, are powerless in terms of what they can do, where they can go, and when. For many kids, it's a very highly controlled environment. So the restorative justice, the restorative practice concept, is, as I understand, is really about doing things with students. Tell us a little bit about that and how it sort of backs up to what would just be the traditional, you did something wrong, here's your punishment.
Well, The fundamental hypothesis of restorative is that human beings are happier, more cooperative, make positive choices and changes in their behaviors when people in authority do things with them, mm-hmm. not to them, not for them, but with them. So our whole goal is to give that high support, but also have those boundaries and expectations. Mm-hmm. It's not permissive. It's not neglectful. It's we support you. We're here for you. We do have expectations. Here's what we need from you, but here's how we're going to help you get there if you can't. So in that sense, we do things with the students if they make poor choices, if they do things that interrupt or take away from the learning. We are working with them to guide them and facilitate that deeper personal reflection.
Mm-hmm. On the program with us is Karen Rice. She is the Restorative Justice Facilitator for Roseville Community Schools. So given you've got maybe a dozen years or so under your belt, how have students and staff and parents responded to this approach over time?
Well, there's a lot of ways. First of all, I'll touch on families. Sometimes when students are suspended, we invite the families in together with all the parties as a community. And we work together as a community to repair the harm, to see who's been affected, to get the students, all the students, to look at their choices. And our families are always welcoming of having that opportunity, because those are actually some really beautiful moments, because students who've been affected by other kids, those parents are concerned about the student who's actually affected their child. So there's a lot of love and concern as a community for where we want our children to grow. Mm-hmm. So families always welcome that opportunity. And is, you know, sometimes we can take some time off of an at-home suspension if we're able to participate in those and do it productively. We have sit-downs with teachers and students. We have sit-downs with students and students. Whenever there's some kind of relationship that's been harmed, we sit down and we do that deep digging, that personal reflection, how to fix it.
You know, it speaks volumes to the role of you being the facilitator, because in many respects, you're just helping them make things happen, which really is the essence of facilitation. So what is the difference? I hear these words interchanged a lot, but what is the difference between restorative practice and restorative justice?
Well, restorative practices is that culture, that building, that community, that sense of day-to-day, this is just who we are. This is how we speak to our kids. This is how we make our kids feel welcome and valued. Restorative justice is when harm has occurred. So it's our response to harm. How do we dig into it? How do we see who was affected, what those that affected others were thinking at the time, what they thought about since, and, you know, how they can fix it, what they need to do.
Just a fantastic program in Roseville Community Schools. I want to take a minute and thank you, Karen Rice, for joining us. Most important, I want to wish you continued good luck this school year and keep up the good work. It really is good for kids.
It is. It's awesome. And I have to give a shout out to teachers everywhere, administrators. Roseville is just made up of amazing staff who give very deeply from their heart. And it's not just our district, but our teachers work very, very hard with our restorative program, because teaching is not easy, but they come with open hearts full of compassion and understanding all the time.
Thank you for that. Coming up next, we are cooking up something special with Michelle Downs, culinary arts teacher from Southlake High School in St. Clair Shores. With that, let's take a break, hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back right after this. You're listening to School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Point Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us on the program now is Michelle Downs, culinary arts teacher from Southlake High School in St. Clair Shores. Welcome to the program, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you. If you're like me, I am truly amazed at the number of places you can eat out nowadays. From fast food to casual dining to the fanciest of restaurants, to me, it seems like no one is eating at home anymore. And as such, and I'm sure you know this well, we need restaurant workers of all kinds to fill this incredible demand. So in your role as a culinary arts instructor, for our listeners here, help us understand your culinary arts program at Southlake High School.
Well, it's not what many of us remember as the foods class. This is a career class. We teach our students how to run a restaurant, basically from the bottom up. We start with the dishwater and making sure that everything is the right temperatures, and then we teach them how to use knives and how to cook different recipes, how to serve our guests. We teach them how to create menus, how to market the restaurant that we are creating. It's very much from the bottom up. They get to learn each step of restaurants and restaurant business. And they get to touch on a little bit of hotel management and industry-wide changes, things mm-hmm. like that.
So much more than just cooking food, mm-hmm. obviously. Along the lines of safety, tell me and tell our listeners more about how students learn to keep food safe from contamination, which I'm sure is on the minds of all of us when you go out to eat. How does that operate in your program?
Well, in my program, we utilize the ServSafe certification. Once the students are certified, they actually have gained themselves articulated credits in if they decide to go further in culinary arts in several different college settings. But it is an industry-wide certification. It's recognized in most states and definitely throughout Michigan. You are now certified to be able to manage a restaurant mm-hmm. when you leave my class.
And am I correct in understanding that when you go in a restaurant and you see ServSafe certification on a placard of some kind, there's someone on site at that restaurant who has this certification to ensure that things are being followed? Is that a fair assessment of that?
Yes. According to the health department, in order to be in operation, you have to have someone on site that is ServSafe manager certified.
And that's statewide?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. And connected to ServSafe, tell us a little bit about ProStart in terms of safety and whatnot.
Now, ProStart is an organization of restaurant workers, chefs, professionals in the industry that are actually the people who put our book out, our textbook that we use at Southlake and in many districts in Macomb and Wayne and Oakland. ProStart is an organization that also is affiliated with the Michigan hospitality industry, and they hold professional developments for teachers. They do a whole bunch of networking within the industry between teachers and industry professionals, and they also hold a statewide competition as well as a national and an international competition.
So in addition to food safety, tell us about how many other ways safety away from food plays a role in your program for students.
Oh, well, we learn knife skills, so there's knife safety. There's also safety in the workplace as far as learning how to communicate, moving past each other in the kitchen, knowing that, okay, this is hot, don't bump into me. Knowing when you can be loud and when not to be loud so other people can be heard. There's a lot of different kinds of safety that yeah. play in. You also have to consider your guests, because we are open to the public at Southlake. So we have to consider the safety of our guests. Are they going to be allowed to view our restaurant? Are they going to be allowed to see inside mm-hmm. of the kitchen? That kind of a thing.
Yeah. And, you know, at the deli counter at Meijer, I'm always watching the staff run that slicer. And if ever there was training needed on equipment, it's one of those machines for sure. So on that note, tell us a little bit about how your students, in addition to your class at the school, how they get opportunities out in the real world, places they go to utilize and apply these skills.
We do have several students that end up working their first time jobs in the food industry. We provide a reference for them. We have a certification for them. So if they've earned the certification already, that places them in a position even at 17 or 18 years old to be a shift manager or an assistant manager position. They usually are given a premium bonus if they do work in the food industry. But we also work with places like Continental Catering that they come in and tell them about different sides of our industry, talk about the yachts that they operate and the weddings that they put on, and they do some hiring recruiting through us. So our chefs get to have a little bit of a taste of every aspect.
And some of your students actually go to competitions, is that correct?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
This year, we're starting with ProStarts competitions. My second year kids are going to go to what they consider their boot camp, and that gives you a little overview of all of the different competition segments that they have. They have different kinds of things that you can enter, different events such as table decorating, food management, food safety. They have menu building. They have cake decorating. Mm-hmm. They have the culinary arts, where you put together your own menu and prepare it in a certain amount of time.
Talk about a full package of culinary arts. Mm-hmm. I always go back to it. It's so much more than just cooking food when you prepare a student to go out into the real world. And on that note, tell us about Southlake High School's fully functioning restaurant that you have right in the school.
Well, we operate the Southlake Bistro. It usually opens mid to late October and stays open until about April. That gives me time to get all the kids trained and make sure that they're ready to serve the public. We're open Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 11 to 2. And we have a weekly menu. Usually we try to do one vegetarian soup and one other soup option. We'll have a main entree or a salad option and a choice of a couple different desserts. And what we do is we split up the class, and each week they get a different station. The second year kids get to be the managers of the stations and make sure that everybody's following the rules. And it's
Cool. What a great opportunity to practice the skills there before you go out into the real world. Michelle Downs, culinary arts teacher from Southlake High School. As we've discussed many times on School Talks, career and technical education programs are doing quite well across the state, and Southlake High School's program is a shining example of it, from the restaurant to the opportunity for advancement after high school and just all the real-world applications provided for students. What a great opportunity. I want to thank all our guests who joined us on the program today. With several weeks of school behind us, this is a great time to ask your child what they like about school. And whatever they tell you, ask them why. This simple question can foster an important conversation with them about what they are learning in school. We'll leave it there until next week, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.